Progressive presents Mindflowness with Flo.
You are a mighty fortress of supreme knowledge. Progressive Direct has not only revealed their rates, but those of their competitors. If you were any more in the know, you would be drowning in, you know, the know.
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates, because knowledge is power. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Hello and welcome to episode number 31 of the Being Brilliant radio show. Sorry about the slight delay in the start of this. We've had a few minor technical glitches behind the scenes, but we're all ready and raring to rock and roll right now. And some of you may have realized that Henrietta Inman was supposed to be being interviewed this evening. But unfortunately, at the last minute, she couldn't. So I'm actually now here with David C.M. Carter, otherwise known as The Mentor, and I'm very privileged to be able to be sitting with him today to do this interview. Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
So I'd just like to start off today with David talking a little bit about his life story and how he got to be where he is today, and then we're going to dive into what is being brilliant for David. So David, give us a little bit of your background, please. How you started out?
Well, I was born at an early age in London and grew up in a family, working middle-class family in England.
Okay.
My father travelled a lot with his job, and we ended up living in Australia and New Zealand and a couple of other places growing up.
Yeah.
Came back to the UK when I was 8 or 9 and went to a grammar school in Surrey and studied languages and played rugby.
Languages and rugby, sounds great. I did much of the same, but not rugby, lots of hockey.
And throughout my time at senior school, the only thing I wanted to do was eventually to become James Bond.
Yeah.
And yeah. So my plan was to learn languages and join the army and intelligence corps and to play rugby for the army. I played rugby at quite a high level at school. And unfortunately, when I was 16, I had an artificial hip fitted.
Gosh.
And that put paid to my army career and my rugby career.
Uh-huh.
And really absolutely clueless about the plan B. My father suggested that I should go into banking, and which horrified me because that was what he'd done all his life. And but I actually started work when I was 18 for Barclays Bank International.
You did go into banking.
And the only reason I went into banking was because of the word international, and they promised to send me off all around the world. Anyway, at that time in the late 70s, Barclays were retrenching and bringing all of the expats home, so the chance of going overseas was pretty slim.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw an advert in the Financial Times for, which I can still remember the wording, it was, come and join the racy-pacy world of high finance and important deadlines.
Racy-pacy?
Become an international officer trainee executive with the Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation.
Oh, wow. Goodness me.
And I thought that sounds like James Bond and international jet set.
Certainly does.
So I phoned the number and had to speak to a chap called Mr. Vic Coles, and amazingly he answered the phone. And I said, well, I saw the advert in the Financial Times for this international officer thing, and I'd like to apply. And he, basically told me that the advert was 2 or 3 months out of date, and where on earth did I see it?
Oh, no.
I picked it up that morning in the dentist and found an old Financial Times in the dentist. Anyway, he said, give me one good reason why I ought to employ you. And I said, because I'll help the bank win the International Bank Sevens tournament at rugby. And he said, come and see me at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Oh, I love it.
So I did, and flagged my way into the job.
Fantastic.
And over the next 10 years, I spent at least a year working in Germany, Switzerland, Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, Dubai, California, and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of I got the travel bug out of the system. Not quite James Bond, but...
Close enough.
And I think actually the gift of that 10 years were two things. One was living for at least a year in a number of different cultures around the world.
Yeah.
And so I really got into every culture where I moved to and learned the language and tried to learn the customs of the culture. And so I think after 10 years of doing that, I really did understand how to do business all around the world. And the second thing was that I was in private equity part of the bank. And so every day we looked at a different business vertical. And I was fascinated in business models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how come those two companies set up shop in the same year in the same town with access to the same resources, but 10 years later, this one's 20 times bigger? And the answer was always something to do with culture and people and leadership.
Very interesting.
And so I became fascinated in what was the sort of performance X factor of an organization. Was it the leadership, the culture, the people? And it was always a combination of those. It was never technology. It was never access to resources or money or anything like that. And anyway, I had a pretty successful career in private equity for 10 years. And at the age of 29, I was involved in, we led the biggest ever management buyout done in Britain at the time.
Gosh.
And we had a successful exit 11 months later. And in a way, even though it was an amazing experience and fantastic privilege, I woke up a few days after the celebrations of the exit and felt a little bit like you might feel if you won the Premier League and the Championship and the FA Cup all in one season. And I wondered how on earth I could repeat that success to do the biggest deal age 29 or 30. In Exeter, it was a bit of a coup. And I made a bit of money and actually had enough money that I could afford to pay the bills at home for a few years and not worry about it. And so I decided that was as good a time as any to stop being a consultant, financier, advisor to companies and entrepreneurs and actually become one myself. And after a period of 6 months of research, even though I never hit a golf ball in my life, I decided that the next part of my life was owning and operating golf and country clubs. And okay. So the next 10 years of my career, I did two startups.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I built up and sold. The second one I built up and floated on stock exchange. And that company those two companies owned and operated golf and country clubs in the UK. And the first business, we won the BT Vision 100 Award. I won the PricewaterhouseCoopers Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award.
Goodness me.
All the rest of it, which was, people told me normally a kiss of death. Because most of the companies that win those awards go bust the year.
That didn't happen, no.
And then the second company I took public And I had the thrill and joy and delight and pride of being the best performing share on AIM. But I also had the ignominy and shame of being the worst performing share on AIM. We were the 16th company to ever float on AIM. And so it was, you know, Wild West days. But anyway, after 10 years of doing that, I had 10 years of sort of hands-on experience of being an entrepreneur on top of the 10 years of advising and consulting to them.
Yeah.
And I then had a fairly dramatic paradigm shift in my personal life.
Okay.
When the woman I'd been married to for 18 years and who was the mother of my two children fell in love with someone else and moved to the other end of the planet. And so I was left with a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old to bring up on my own. And I couldn't juggle being a public company CEO and a good dad. And I decided the kids came first, so I resigned. And probably spent about the first 2 or 3 months just focused on the kids and home and everything. And then really what happened was lots of people approached me and said, oh, you could help me decide whether to float my business, sell my business, raise money, expand overseas, help me put a board, all the things I've been doing for the last 20 years. And you must have some spare time whilst you're busy thinking about what you want to do next. And since I was absolutely penniless, after my divorce, actually the idea of taking on some clients and generating some income was a good idea. But during that 6-7 months where I ended up taking on 6 clients, I really was looking at all sorts of weird and wonderful things, from dating sites and reinsurance broking and all sorts of invoice discounting. And anyway, all these people kept turning up and saying, well, whilst you're busy thinking about what you want to do next, could you help me decide whether to do this, that, and the other? And so I took them on. And then my 6th client was actually a very famous celebrity who was in the newspapers a lot. And anyway, I had lunch with her one day and decided to take her on. I said, let me sleep on it overnight to think about whether I'll take you on or not. Because I was actually quite worried about what if the press ever latched on to her and me,
mm-hmm.
and made something out of it that wasn't there and the impact it could have had on the children. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to sort of sleep on it overnight. But anyway, I told my mum, who'd been looking after the kids that day, gosh, you never guess who I had lunch with today, and she wants to become a client. And my mother said, gosh, it's going so well for you, isn't it? And I said, well, it is going well, but I've got no time to think about what I want to do next. And my mum said, oh, I thought this was what you were doing next. And so in the car driving home that night, I thought, I'm really good at this. I love doing it.
Yeah.
It pays the bills and it makes a difference. And so unless I wake up in the morning and can think of a reason why I shouldn't be doing this, maybe this is what I'm doing next. And so the next morning I woke up and couldn't think of any reason why I shouldn't be doing it. And so I turned what I've been doing as a sort of part-time thing into a business. And actually the word mentor came from this 6th client who'd asked me to take her on. And I remember her saying, you know, I really want you to be my mentor. And I said, oh, I don't do that. And she said, what do you mean you don't do that? That's just what you've been telling me for the last half an hour you do with your clients. And I said, oh, is that what you call it? So the next morning I realized I was now a mentor. And anyway, over the subsequent 14 years, I built up what eventually became the world's leading chief executive mentoring company.
Amazing.
Which I sold in 2010 to a management buyout after 14 years. And when I sold it, we had offices literally all around the world. We mentored 17 of the top 50 CEOs in Australasia, a dozen Fortune 100 CEOs, and about 40 FTSE 500 CEOs.
So it really did go very well for you.
Yeah, it went pretty good. But actually, you know, the truth is, even though it did go pretty well, it was incredibly hard work, like any entrepreneurial startup businesses. But actually, the reason I got up in the morning was to feed my children and to put a roof over their head. And I was doing this because it paid the bills, not because I was passionate about it. I mean, I loved doing it, and I think I was very good at it. But it wasn't about building a business. It was about taking care of my children. And then after 14 years, the company had grown quite substantially, and we had a couple of offers to buy the business. And I think at that point, I'd got three regions around the world, Asia Pacific, EMEA for Europe and the Middle East, and the Americas. And I'd got three guys running each of those regions very well. And there wasn't a fourth region to open. And without going into lots of detail, there were sort of strategy differences. I wanted to keep it very niche and just be for CEOs. They wanted to expand it to all of the C-suite, and there were, you know, lots of other challenges and issues as well. And a bit like I'd done a couple of times in my life before, I just woke up one day and thought, a bit like Mary Poppins, you know, the winds change direction, it's time to move on.
Love a bit of Mary Poppins.
At the time, I was living in San Francisco. The kids were getting to a point where they were a few years away from leaving home, and I thought, I'll move back to London. And so I moved back to London in October 2010 when I sold the business, and essentially just decided to, although based in London, to have my own private portfolio of mentoring clients, several of whom I brought with me from the old firm, and they were in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Johannesburg, Moscow, Copenhagen, and wherever. So I did that for 4 or 5 years until September 15. Of course, I think my life is perfectly normal, but most other people looking from the outside would think it's been rather unconventional, and particularly perhaps the single parenting bit and all the rest of it. But I only ever wanted to work with clients who wanted to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So making money was fine, but I wanted them to make money by making a difference, not the other way around. And that's always been a passion of mine, and I think I can prove empirically that people can make more money with a make a difference mindset than they make if they just focus on making money. And anyway, about 5 years ago now, I had a pretty major severe operation that I'd have in my neck, where I had a trapped nerve, which is actually a problem that was caused by my hip operation many years ago. And whilst I was recuperating on the sofa for 5 weeks after this fairly drastic neck operation, a friend and mentor, Matthew Kelly, who has written 20 books that have sold over 1 million copies, and one sold actually 19 million copies.
Gosh.
Who is a very good friend, he had badgered me for years and saying he's Australian, although he lives in America, and you should write a book, mate. So we had a Skype call on day two or day three after I was home and resting on the sofa, unable to move, you know, for 5 weeks. And he said, now would be a good time for you to write that book. Thought about it for a day or so, and I think after 3 days of lying on the sofa doing nothing, I've got cabin fever. I thought, maybe I should have a go writing this book. And over the next 11 days, 120,000 words
In 11 days?
In 11 days.
Oh, my God.
Ended up in this big document on my computer. And several days ago, I worked 17, 18, 19 hours. And it just literally came out, probably a bit like this interview. And on the 12th day, I decided to sleep and rest. And on the 13th day, I read what I'd written the previous 11, 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
And apart from the fact I was sort of irritated that I told the same story four different ways in four different chapters or whatever, I thought, actually, you know, there is a book in here somewhere. And so I contacted another one of my mentors, a lady called Jenny, who lives in Sydney, Australia, who I've been great friends with for 15 years. And she was in her early career a book editor. And since she'd known me and been my mentor 15, she knew about me and my work. And and so I shared it with her, and she said, oh, there's a good book in here somewhere. And I think because we're great friends and she and I have worked together very closely, I offered to pay for her to fly from Australia and come and spend a month with me if she'd help me edit the book. did a rather fun thing, and I chartered a yacht with a skipper and a crew and a lovely place in the Greek islands, and we worked 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for 4 weeks. And by the time we got back to Santorini, which was where we set off from, we'd got a 56,000 word book.
Fantastic.
Anyway, it's quite a long, funny story, but anyway, I never quite understood the difference between publishing a book and printing a book. So I actually got a copy of my book printed, but Matthew Kelly, who wrote the foreword of the book, sent it to a publisher, and they decided that it should be published as opposed to printed. And so I decided to give all the profits from the book to a couple of charities that I work with. One that helps young people get on the ladder of life by giving them a job, or helping them get a job mill and helps them set up their own business. And anyway, the book's now gone a bit ballistic, and it's been translated into Russian and Chinese and Portuguese.
So the book is, it's called Breakthrough. I'm afraid I'm not on video today, otherwise I'd show it to you. But learn the secrets of the world's leading mentor and become the best you can be. World's leading mentor. That's pretty amazing that I'm sitting next to the world's leading mentor right now doing it.
Well, stealing a line from Richard Branson, I don't know if I am the world's leading mentor, but I'm certainly in the top one.
I love it. So the book is called Breakthrough. You can get it on Amazon, or you can go to www.davidcmcarter.com and order it there. Isn't that correct?
It is indeed.
DavidCMCarter.com.
And all the profits from the book go to these two charities that I work with. Anyway, Breakthrough was a bit of a breakthrough for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, I had absolutely no idea it would end up doing as well as it's done. No idea at all. But it led to lots of invitations to speak, and for the last 3 years, I've had a regular slot on BBC Worldwide newspaper review, and I'm the sort of leadership pundit. Although I think my 3 years literally just come to an end, and I think they're probably quite relieved because I think I've been a bit provocative and cheeky
on TV.
And I think that is because, you know, the media wants to present news stories in a newsworthy way. But actually the real story, and I'm trying to think of a good example recently with the emissions scandal, where it's very clear that all of these major automotive companies have for 20 years been cheating everybody and lying through their teeth about the pollution that these cars produce. And actually the news headline was, even after the announcement, VW continues to sell the cars.
Yes, I remember that.
And I was like, that's not the news. The news is that, you know, €4 billion has been wiped off their share price that will never be gained back because they've lost the trust of their customers. And whilst I was on air, people were tweeting in that, you know, I only bought a VW because my next door neighbour persuaded me that they were emission friendly and I want to be environmentally thoughtful.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that's a bit of a fun thing to do. But I've taken on some clients as a result of my book. It's opened lots of doors. But the big thing for me that the book has allowed me to do is, I think one of the reasons I wrote the book is because I wanted to democratize some of the stuff that I'd learned working on with my expensive fee-paying clients around the world. And actually, for every expensive fee-paying client I've ever had, I've always had one pro bono mentee who ran a charity or a social enterprise or a not-for-profit. And of course, the things that they want to talk about and be mentored on are no different to the ones that, you know, expensive multinational entrepreneurial jet set people want to be mentored on. And through the talks I've done and the book, you know, it just made me realize that if I give you all of my money, I've got no money left. But if I give you all of my wisdom, I've still got my wisdom.
Yeah.
And so it just made me realize that perhaps there was a way that anyone, anywhere, could get access to wisdom for free. And I was kind of wondering, now obviously my book costs £9.99 or whatever it is, which is a lot less than the fees I charge to people, but it made me start to think about how I could democratize wisdom. And
amazing concept.
And so I don't know the statistics for the whole world, but in the UK, for example, there are 31.5 million people who go to work every day. And whether it's coaching or mentoring or training or business schools or big consulting firms, the access to that IP is really available to a very small number of people. It's expensive, it's exclusive. And so 26.4 million people out of that 31.5 million people have access to nothing.
Gosh.
And, you know, they don't have coaching, they don't have mentoring, they don't have training, there's no learning management system. They work for a small company that's got 10, 15, 20 people.
And doesn't have the budget.
And doesn't have the budget, or doesn't have a boss who would even know how to go about helping them with it. And so if you walk down Oxford Street on any day of the week and you ask the 10,000 people who walk past you, would you like to get ahead in life? What do you think most people would say?
Yes, please.
If you ask them the second question is, well, what are you doing about it? What do you think their answer would be?
Not a lot.
And if the third question was, why?
Because I didn't know where to start.
Exactly. So in March 2016, we spent a lot of time and a lot of money with Google, and we asked them, what are the top 200 personal and professional development questions that are asked on Google, in 2015. So a 12-month period, what are the top 200 personal and professional development questions that were asked on Google in English in the UK? And the top 50 questions were asked how many times?
No idea.
503 million times. And
wow.
So if you think about it, there's 31.5 million people at work, 26.4 million of whom have got access to nothing, and a group of them are asking the top 50 personal and professional development questions 500 million times in a year. And so you realize that the sort of stuff that is put out there by business schools or in self-help books or in learning management isn't answering the questions that ordinary people feel is holding them back from getting ahead.
Yeah.
And because of the way the internet works, I mean, if you go right back to when Google first launched, I mean, it was the most unbelievably powerful, brilliant search engine. And today, it's the most brilliantly powerful advert server. And so Google doesn't actually provide you with the answers to your questions. It provides you with products and services that are tangential to the search query you've done.
Yeah.
And not only that, they sell your search information to everyone on the planet. So if you search for BMW cars on Google, 5 series, 3 minutes later in Instagram,
everywhere,
and
they
everywhere,
follow you around.
They do.
I've seen it happen. Yes.
And so actually, it's harder now to find good quality content on the internet than it ever was before. And so in 2014, I went to the TED conference in Long Beach, California.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme of the TED conference that year was all about disruption. Uber, Airbnb, TripAdvisor,
yep,
and all the other great disruptors. And so when I came home from the TED conference, I thought, how do I disrupt mentoring? How do I take it away from being an elite, expensive service? And how do I create a way to enable anyone, anywhere, on any device for free to have access to the wisdom that's already out there, but not curated and collated in one place?
Gosh.
And so that was the exam question. And later on this year, in hopefully November, we'll be launching My Mentor, which is a digital platform which will enable anyone, anywhere, anytime, on any device to get instant answers to the questions that they seek answers to that would help them get ahead in life.
Amazing. This is mymentor.net. And if people go there now, what can they see?
At the moment, they can register. Mm-hmm. So we will then send them updates and information. But it's not launching until Q4. So we interviewed 20 really fascinating and interesting leaders and asked them a bunch of interesting questions a year or so ago now. And we've actually repurpose those interviews and put them together in a series called Secrets of Success, which is showing on British Airways InFlight.
Which
is 16 million people around the world.
So you
can see all three of those episodes. They're half an hour each. There's some interviews with amazing people. But they're not conventional interviews. We haven't invited the people on to talk about themselves and how they got to the top and their secrets of success formula. We've actually asked them specific questions that users want to ask them about.
Amazing.
How they could become successful. So it's not about the guest interviewee, it's about the user. And I think the unique thing about My Mentor is it's a user pull model rather than a publisher, broadcaster, push model. And so you will never be sent anything on My Mentor unless it's an answer to a question which you've asked. So you'll
My mind boggles the technology behind that. I'm sure.
Mine too.
that's incredible. So it's all very not even customer. They're not customers as such, are they? They're just finding
members.
Member-centric, member-focused. Gosh.
And I think that, that if you ask any millennial person or anybody these days, everyone feels that there's a tsunami of content which is just sent to them in every minute of the day from someone. And if you can spend your whole life unsubscribing from things, but you still get sent buckets of stuff. And so I all of our research would suggest that if you could go to a place that you knew was like a library that had every answer to every question in it, but you were only ever shown the books that were related to your search query, and it might say, oh, if you found that book helpful on top that topic, other people also found this book on this topic helpful and found that one helpful. So we can we've developed an algorithm called LEAP, which stands for Learn, Engage, Act, Progress. And so the more you end up engaging in the platform, the more the platform learns about you. But unlike every other platform, we will never sell or use data from user usage for any purpose other than to provide better content to improve their journey. And so, for example, even though there will be advertising on the site, which is the commercial model, if people want to take the advertising off for £1 per month, they can have access to absolutely everything advert-free. But if they can't afford the pound a month, or they don't mind the, you know, the advertising, then it'll be advertising. But going back to our story earlier, if you happen to see an advert on there for BMW and you click the button and watch their video, it takes you back to the platform, not off to the BMW site. And we would never sell the information to BMW that someone had clicked on that advert. We might tell them, you know, 5,000 people clicked on it and they were this age profile, this gender profile, whatever they lived in, these kind of postcodes, but we would never ever give anyone's individual information away. And also, because of some of the topics that people will search for, given the research we did on the top 200 topics, yes, you can also post a question or a comment anonymously. So my boss is a bully, what do I do with that? You wouldn't post that with your open profile, you know, if your colleagues or your boss could see it. So you can post that anonymously. But we've also thought through the moderation. So in football, in soccer, there's a sort of yellow card, red card system. If someone has a bad foul, they get a yellow card. If they do two in a game, they get sent off, and they get a red card. Or if they do one very bad one, they get sent off. And so if anyone posts inappropriate content or conducts themselves inappropriately, other users can yellow card them, and we'll then moderate and review it. If we agree with the users it's inappropriate, they will be deleted. So they will be taken off the platform for a month and can't post or comment. If they do it twice a year, their profile will be deleted forever. So we're trying to create an online experience which feels as close to a human mentoring relationship as possible, with all the safeguards built in for privacy, anonymity, and security and safety and confidentiality, so people can be vulnerable and ask for what they really want.
Wow. It certainly sounds like you've covered all bases.
I'm sure we haven't. I'm sure we'll find out lots of
it. So this is mymentor.net launching in
Q4
this year. So go and register and you will be able to ask your most burning questions. And talking about burning questions, of the top 200 questions that were asked, would you be available now to answer a couple of them?
I'll have a go, and please excuse me, but actually, and I can talk about some of them, you know, conceptually or generically, but actually that IP of those 200 questions, which we spent a lot of money on, we're not going to let people know what those 200 topics are until we've launched.
So as the world's leading mentor, what would be the number one question you get asked?
Well, that's actually an impossible question to answer, because for two reasons. One is you have to understand that my clients have always been CEOs,
yeah.
and so it's a fairly restricted group of people. So the sort of things that they might ask might not be generically relevant to everybody. But actually, I think a better question and a more interesting answer is there a theme that could apply to anybody? And I think that the two most powerful mentoring or coaching questions are, tell me more and why.
Okay.
Because what I've discovered over the last 20 years is that both men and women, men more than women, but both, particularly if they're in a position of leadership, they always start off with what I describe as the presenting problem. And so the presenting problem might be, well, we spent a fortune on McKinsey or Deloitte or someone, we've come up with this new strategy, the whole top team, we had a 5-day offsite, we launched it this time last year, and here we are a year later, and it just hasn't worked. So we clearly need a new strategy. And to them, the presenting problem is, we need a new strategy. But after half a dozen tell me mores and whys, what you actually realize, there was nothing wrong with the strategy, but it was a really poor execution. And so how do I change my strategy might be the most frequently asked question, but it's actually not the right question. So a bit of digging into tell me more and why, tell me more and why, actually unearth the real issue, which is customer service or employee engagement or whatever. Or no one likes the product. So I think that rather than there being a most frequently asked question, the most frequent encounter in my mentoring career has been that the presenting problem is rarely the real problem. And so I think the point for your listeners might be to think about things that they are troubled by, holding them back, that they'd like to get some advice or help or a solution with, which presumably is one of the reasons why they listen to your radio show, to get advice and help and ideas, is to actually do the tell me more why question on themselves. And sort of, I'd like to know how I can change career, you know, in my 30s, you know, I'm fed up with being an accountant, I want to do something different or whatever it is. And it, you know, the tell me more why, tell me more why, even to themselves, will, I think, actually help them, not necessarily answer their own question, but to pose better questions. Because, what's a good example? At the moment, very relevant and topical. You know, a lot of young people who are in the groups that I talk to say, so how's Brexit going to affect me? Well, there's a million answers to that question. And until I know who you are, what you do, what your job is, what your company does, whether your company imports or exports to the EU or not, it's impossible to do it. But actually, underneath it all, that's not what they're really asking. And I actually had an example on this very same topic about a week ago, where actually the young man who asked me was really asking, well, I'm thinking of getting engaged and getting married. I'm not sure if the economy is going to be bumpy over the next few years, and so whether I should delay getting, you know, it wasn't, how's Brexit going to affect me? It's like, is Brexit something that perhaps is going to disrupt my financial stability, and maybe I ought to hold off making a big commitment like this? And that came about through half a dozen tell me more than whys. And actually, in that particular conversation, a few more tell me whys, or tell me more than tell me whys. Actually, I think he was realizing that he was very young And even though he'd been with his girlfriend for several years, and she was keen to get married and start a family, he didn't feel he was mature enough at all to think about getting married or starting a family. And so, should he split up with his girlfriend, let her find someone else, because she was ready, but he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that conversation came out from, how's Brexit going to affect me?
Gosh, yes, it's amazing.
So I don't think there is a question, but I think that there is a technique, if you like, which is, what's the real question?
To get a little deeper. Okay. So, given that this is the Being Brilliant radio show, what is being brilliant for you?
What is being brilliant for me? Well, number one would have to be being a good dad.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I've ever succeeded in that. I've certainly given it my best shot. No, I don't think I have, actually. And I think that the one thing I would say about myself is I've definitely given it my best shot. And I would never criticize my efforts, but if I had my time again, would I do lots of things differently, given what I now know? Yes, absolutely. But I think being a good parent would be something that I'd like to think of being brilliant at. I think being a good friend.
Yeah.
There aren't many people in life that we can truly say are great friends. But I think the few people that I would like to think consider me as a great friend, I would like to think that I've been brilliant at being a great friend. And one of my sort of credos is make yourself useful. And so I think everyone that I ever meet, you know, I start off with a point of view of, how can I help you? What can I do to support you in it in some way? And I think I'm pretty good at doing that.
Okay, and what would be...
And I'm a good dog owner.
You are a very good dog owner. David has the most amazingly beautiful dog called Bee.
Yeah, so... Well, that's not cool, that you might make an appearance.
Yes.
So being brilliant, I think, is being authentic and real and honest and vulnerable, and actually doing that, tell me more and why, to yourself. And it's really about being authentic. You know, I'm good at some things that I don't enjoy. I'm lousy at a few things that I really enjoy. You know, I've got the most brilliant singing voice on my own, but I don't sing in front of anybody else. But I think it's being brilliant to me is about being authentic and real and being the best version of yourself.
There's a lot going around on the internet these days, especially in the coaching, mentoring world, about being authentic. What does that really mean for you?
I think for me it's about living in alignment with and in accordance with my values. And one of the things I've noticed over the years is that any time I end up doing something, saying something, or behaving in a way that's out of alignment with my values, I get hurt, someone else gets hurt, the pain lasts for a long time afterwards, I kick myself for doing whatever it was I did. And so I think, to me, authentic is being... So if you think of a 2x2 grid,
mm-hmm.
if you think of the top left-hand corner as being how I see myself, and the top right-hand corner as being how other people see me, and the bottom left-hand corner being how I would like to see myself.
Right.
And the bottom right-hand corner being how other people would like to see me.
Uh-huh.
I think being authentic is the intersection of...
Okay. That's a pretty good exercise to sit down and work through. I shall do that one. Well, thank you very much. This is Amy Hackett-Jones of the Being Brilliant Radio Show, episode number 31, interviewing David C.M. Carter. You can find his book, Breakthrough, on davidcmcarter.com. And you can also go ahead and sign up to mymentor.com, which is launching in Q4 this year, and you'll be able to ask all your most pertinent questions.
And even impertinent ones.
And impertinent ones, too. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, David, for being my guest on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I look forward to asking my pertinent and impertinent questions. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening in. Go well, be brilliant, and until next time, bye for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
I got two free smartphones when I switched to Metro PCS.
One for him and one for me.
It's not for you. It's for people like me.
And parrots.
I knew I should have gotten a dog.
Get two free Samsung Galaxy J3 Prime smartphones when you switch two lines to Metro PCS and enjoy a 4G LTE network that's more reliable than ever before. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in past 90 days. See store for details, terms, and conditions.